Hey, listeners. On this episode, something slightly different. We're tackling my thing. It's EL me time. I've been having an issue with one of my human coworkers, and today I'm going to resolve it. All right. Hello, Wendy, queen of Gimlet podcast, Science Versus.
Hello. Hello, Flora.
I'm going to start with a quick question. What is the worst part about working in this office?
I actually just really quite like working at Gimlet.
Well, let me tell you about the worst part for me.
All right. Yeah, sure.
It's the people.
Interesting.
I make a show that answers people's burning questions, and we work in an office with tons of curious people with a bottomless well of burning questions.
It's true.
And they want those questions answered, like, right now. You know what I mean? They want to jump the line.
I do, yes.
But do you know who the worst offender in all of Gimlet is?
Alex Bloomberg.
I'm going to give you a hint. It's you, Wendy.
It was weird because I heard you say, like, me, but I think you meant to say Matt Lieber.
You slack me questions. You stop me in the hall. We're in the bathroom. You slide me a question under the stall and a toilet paper square.
It's only a slight exaggeration.
The answer is sit. Don't hover.
It's so hard to believe, though.
Do you know that ELT has an official intake process?
Interesting.
If you want your questions answered, you have to go through the proper channels. 833-RING-ELT, the ELT helpline. Do you have a phone on you?
I do.
Okay. Please get it out.
All right.
Do you need the country code?
That is an unnecessary question.
So I'm going to give you the number, and I want you to leave a voicemail.
Oh, I've got it on speed dial.
Hey, Flora and the ELT team. Okay, it's Wendy, your helpline troll. So I was looking at my kitchen the other day, and I saw this little ant crawl by, and it just gave me a lot of questions. But the big one, I guess, is that I had heard this story a little while ago that ants can help each other out. And I looked at that little critter on my kitchen, and I was like, really? Thanks. It obviously is a factual emergency.
Well, now that we have that formality out of the way.
Out of the way.
Thank you very much for calling the ELT helpline.
Oh, what? All right.
I'm honored you thought of us. What interests you about ants?
I really like them. I'm really inspired by them. I basically share a house with many of them.
By choice.
It's cohabitation. I don't have an ant farm. I just have an ant-infested house, to clarify.
Do you have a special, like, is your interest in ants different than your interest in, say, mosquitoes?
Yes. What I love about ants is this idea of a colony, of like a team working together. A team, like, as I know there's this debate around, like, are humans so smart? Because all animals are smart, but we are smarter than ants. Ants are dumb. They are. But they do have this team, and they have a mission, and they build these big, crazy colonies. And that I find super fascinating.
Okay, you mentioned ants helping ants.
Yes.
What did you hear exactly?
There was this study that found that, like, when ants, like, lose some of their legs, their friends will help them out.
Like, they'll come to their rescue?
Yes. How do they do that? Because they seem, like, not like creatures that when we're listing the empathic creatures of the world, ants don't often come up.
They never make the list. It's like dolphins, humans, primates.
Dogs, probably dogs. Someone's putting dogs on that list.
Big dog lover over here. Certainly not insects.
No, right?
Yeah, no.
And also, when they're injured, like, and they bring them back, like, are they nursed to health? Does someone teach them? Does some ant teach them? Does a person teach them?
Very small doctor down there. Are you ready to go down the ant hole?
I am.
Let the antics begin.
Was that an ant reference?
Yes. And that's going to be the only one today, so.
Of course.
Enjoy it.
I am currently.
You are going to get some answers.
I am anted to win it.
Are you dying with anticipation?
Yes.
Are you feeling antsy?
Yes. There are antsies in my panties.
Let me introduce you to the main attraction.
Hi, Wendy.
That is Eric.
Hello, I'm Eric Frank, and I study the behavior of ants.
Eric fell into ants by accident. He started as a primate researcher, but discovered that he could collect data a lot faster with ants.
For big primates, you need to spend years to collect enough data to really see a pattern. And with ants, you can do it in weeks.
You picked ants over orangutans?
Yes. I would say that it's a very different appeal. Like, if you look at social insects like ants, they are completely different to us. They have a completely different system of organizing themselves. They're basically like aliens.
I don't even think there's a battle. Ants are obviously cooler than orangutans.
You're already on Team Ant.
100%.
Yeah, I think it's cool to think that they're like little aliens walking around your bathroom and kitchen and
bed and stuff.
Sure, in your case, bed. Okay, so that's really just to whet your appetite for the very weird world of ants we're about to march into, single file. You called about ancestance, assistance, and their existence. Eric is into that too.
Definitely, I would say that's the centerpiece of my research.
That story that you called about the ants helping their sisters with missing legs, that's Eric's research. So he studies ants in Côte d'Ivoire.
So where you would imagine lions, giraffes.
Zebras.
It's fine. I translated it in my head.
But Eric's not interested in these postcard animals. He is focused on ants and one species in particular, the Matabele ants. They're big, about an inch long.
Whoa!
Black, and they sting. And they're very particular about their diet.
So this is an ant that basically only eats termites. So it's a military-like species in Africa that hunts termites in large groups of up to 500 or 600 ants.
Whoa! This is going to get Game of Thronesy without the sexual violence, and I am in.
Yeah.
Speaking of Game of Thrones, do you want to guess the telltale sign of a Matabele ant colony? Like how you would spot one on the landscape?
Are they decorative?
You might say that.
So you can find the nest easily by just finding a pile of termite heads.
Termite heads.
Oh!
Around their entrance. And they leave that entrance a few times a day to hunt.
They go to kill termites and bring them back to the nest to eat them.
I'm just trying to get a visual. So you've got like a massive termite mound and then all these ants going after it?
Not exactly. Termite mounds are basically impenetrable fortresses.
So attacking them would be futile. But the termites, they also need to eat. So they normally go out of the nest to forage for basically dead wood.
And that's where the ant attack happens.
Can I score this, by the way, as you go?
Please.
So in the early morning, when the sun comes out, the scouts leave the nest searching for the termites.
What do you think?
I love it. So the ant scouts find the termites, then they go back to the nest and rally their army. And then they march to the battleground in a long, terrifying column.
And at the front of the column is the scout that found the termites, which is basically leading them to the termites.
What does it look like from above?
It's basically like a big black snake, like up to 2 or 3 meters long.
Whoa!
And when they get to the termite site, the scout stops.
And somehow the other ants know to stop as well. And it's probably a chemical signal, but we don't know yet. So basically all the ants gather, they're all around the scout, and then it gives another signal basically to go, we attack now. And then all the ants attack all together over the hunting ground of the termites. And yeah, they normally have no idea the ant is coming before they attack.
So what do you mean? Why don't the termites know they're coming?
So termites are generally blind. So they normally move underground. So yeah, no seeing them.
The ants charge in and the bloodbath begins.
So they grab the termite and then they sting them with the venom, and yeah, that kills them basically. And there you have all the dead termites lying around, and for the next 4 or 5 minutes, the ants will be collecting the termites in big piles, putting them in their mouths, and starting to carry them back to the nest basically.
Your mouth is agape.
It is agape. I'm really imagining the whole scene, like the scouts, like, that's the pheromones or whatever. And they're like, come on, come on.
Sisters,
let's do this. And they're all like, rah, 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 rah. That was some of that garble was a termite dying.
I could tell.
Spittle.
It sounded just like it.
Right?
It's not just the termites who suffer, though. War is hell on both sides.
Every fight, they have at least 4 to 6 injured ants that are lying on the battleground.
A common injury? Lost limbs.
Oh.
And this is when the behavior you called about kicks in. Ants helping ants.
This story's got a lot of legs.
And we're going to hear all about those ant acts of bravery after the break. So we left off with injured ants on the battlefield. And here's how it works when the ants come marching in.
So the injured ant actually gives out a help call.
A chemical signal that says, I'm injured, help me. And when their comrades get closer, the injured ant makes a small scene, kind of like the French national soccer team.
They will be acting more injured, they will fall over, they will lie on the ground, flailing with their legs.
And the healthy ant will come over, pick up the injured ant in its mandibles, and then the injured ant stops flailing, like tucks its legs in so it's easier to be carried.
And what I discovered was that they carry them back to safety.
That's so nice of them. Because that would sound like a pain in the ass. You know, when I was younger and like our family would go on hikes, I am the youngest of four, and I would be like, Dad, I don't want to walk anymore. And he'd say, all right, you want to do injured soldier? But he would literally just, like, pull me over his shoulder.
He was carrying you like a sack of potatoes?
Yes.
Or an injured soldier?
Or an injured soldier or an injured ant, I now see.
I hope, did you tuck your legs in and
I probably
stay very
did.
Still? Like your dad, I suspect, these ants don't give free rides to everyone either.
So actually, we have some kind of triage, which basically means they only help ants that are still able to be useful for the colony. If you're too heavily injured, if you lost 4 or 5 legs, for instance, the ant itself will actually not call for help and be left behind at the battlefield. And in the ants, it's the injured ant itself that decides if it should be rescued or not. Unconsciously, of course.
Wow. So they won't send out a signal if they're like, I'm gone.
Exactly, yeah.
Eric found if they lost more than 3 legs, they didn't send out the signal.
So what happens next?
This is the most amazing thing. After triage, a tiny worker ant actually comes out carrying a miniature bugle and a small Cote d'Ivoire flag, plays taps and lays a flag over the wounded ant. It's really quite moving.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful.
Those are the ants being left for dead, but they're also the ants being rescued.
Do they take them back to the hive? Do they take them to a little ant doctor?
Yes, they do.
Injured ants, once they arrived inside the nest, were being treated by their nest mates. So other ants would walk towards them, grab the injured leg with their mouth, and start licking it and cleaning it.
Did you know that ants have tongues?
I did not know they had tongues.
Yeah, they have a kind of tongue, yes.
In my head, when I was imagining it, they have, like, human tongues.
It's a little orangey tongue, you could say.
At what point do they ask for the insurance card? They're like, they lick the wounds and then they're like, if we're to go any further, we're going to need to know.
Ant care for all is actually awesome. First of all, no waits.
They treat the wound a lot in the first half hour after injury, and they're removing everything that was on the wound. Similar to how we would clean it, we would put some sterile alcohol maybe or something to clean it and then bandage it up.
And the treatment is very effective. Eric found that the ants who got the treatment all survived, and the ones that didn't all died.
Wow.
He suspects the nurse ants are producing some kind of antibiotic in a gland on their body.
So we can't use that antibiotics, by the way, right?
Eric says there might be applications down the road.
For grant funding, am I right? To do this experiment, he pulled off a bunch of ant legs, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
It's for science.
Yeah.
For knowledge, for this moment right here. How do you feel about that, Flora?
I feel like I'm complicit.
Do other ants do this, or is this special for Côte d'Ivoire ants?
That's what I wanted to know, too. Is this a one-off? To find out, we called up ant researcher Christina Kwapich, and she said, yeah, they're the only ones who do this.
To perform medical care on another individual and have that individual improve in health and then recover to function again is extremely unusual. I think it may be wholly unique among animals that aren't human.
And like a lot of humans can't do it either.
Yeah, I mean, some of us have to go to university for many years to become good nurses.
That's phenomenal. Wow, in their puny little brains, they have some left to care for others.
And that's not the only wow behavior puny little ant brains can pull off. The ants Christina studies are also going to blow your mind. But before we get to that, I want to give you a sense of who Christina is.
Okay.
She's really got the bug for insects. Here's some tape of our engineer, Sarah, setting up the recording in Christina's yeah. office.
So what else do we have?
What are those disgusting things?
Those are molts of my pet amblypygid Claude. So as he grew, he molted, and that's his exoskeleton. So,
you have, that's your pet?
Yeah, it's sort of related to scorpions. It's a type of arachnid that doesn't sting or bite. It has these giant salad forks for catching other insects. And
what's its name?
An amblypygid, tailless whip scorpion.
Did you name it, though?
Claude.
Oh, man.
Claude. Here's an amblypygid, by the way.
Oh, it's like, so that's a scorpion. It looks, wow. Just imagine if a spider had sex with the Terminator, they would make a amblypygid.
Claude. We'll put the amblypygid on our Spotify page. You can see it right now by going to Spotify and on our Instagram at ELT Show. So let's talk about the ants Christina studies.
I work on an ant called Veromestra pregandii. It's a seed-harvesting ant that lives out here in the Sonoran Desert. And it goes out each morning to collect thousands and thousands of seeds to feed the young ants in the colony.
Every day, these ants create this trail, this single trail from their colony to the foraging site. But there are some dangers along the way.
These little spiders also come out from under rocks and start building their webs along the foraging route that the ants have established.
By the way, the foraging route, they create their own. And then the spiders are like, hello.
Yes. And what Christina saw is that when an ant got stuck in the web, good Samaritans come to the rescue.
They cooperate to pull off the little legs of the spider web, the sticky strands sticking to the sand. They pull those up. They tear apart the web. The spider usually runs away at this point. And then the ant, which is ensnared in the sticky silk, is taken out and carried back home to the nest where the silk is removed.
So the ants aren't just detangling their sisters. They're also dismantling the web.
Oh,
and again, that's really rare.
So most animals run from traps or they avoid them. But in this case, the ants face the trap head on.
Oh, okay, what I am amazed by, though, when Christina said that these ants go out and get food for the babies, like even at that point, I was like, why? Why? Like live your own life, little ant. Like, why do you care? Because I could sort of understand the, like, helping out your brethren.
Yeah.
You guys, you know, sisters, you went out there together with a common mission. One got trapped in the web. Help them out. Put down the web. But you don't even know these babies. You never even met them. Like, why your life to get them food?
This is the whole thing about being in a colony. Your livelihood is connected to the livelihood of the colony. And the analogy that people make is that ants are like cells in a body.
Yeah.
That the survival of the body is more important than the survival of any one cell.
I guess, like, you know, when you're sick and your immune cells go out and basically kill themselves to kill the virus to help you live, that's what the ants are doing.
That's the analogy that ant researchers use.
What do you think of that?
I think this is really, these stories are really confusing. The idea that these ultra-complex, altruistic social interactions are coming from these tiny-brained insects.
Right?
I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, what do we make of it?
So I'm going to play you a stretch of my conversation with Christina, and I want to know what you think.
Great.
What I always make of this is that we always underestimate insects. It is hard to make a comparison between ourselves and these insects. We see the same sort of outcomes. Of course, we rescue one another all the time. We have 911 and rescue services. And the ants seem to have the same protocol in their societies and their cooperative groups. What we can't tell about ants is what their intentions are or what their motivations for these behaviors might be, whether empathy is involved, for instance.
That's the thing I want to drill down on. I mean, does this research suggest that ants are empathetic, that they see their nest mates and feel like they want to help them?
I don't think it suggests that ants are empathetic. You can measure things like that in animals by looking at facial expressions. For instance, expressions of pain when an individual sees another animal experiencing pain. Ants have very blank faces, so we can't ask that question of them.
Do you think there's empathy involved?
I don't think there is, but I don't know. I guess this is a confusing thing to say because I think I ascribe a lot to ants. I think they're beautiful and complex and interesting. I don't think they're automatons. They obviously have experiences which affect their future behavior. They're really good at learning. But by and large, they're responding to a chemical signal, and that's all we can say to it. What we ascribe to it or its meaning is something that isn't necessarily scientific.
Yeah, right. Ascribing meaning. I think that's what happens a lot with these kind of stories about animals helping each other. That we want there to be a meaning to it.
Yeah. And I think we want there to be a meaning for our own behavior.
That is true, of course. I feel like in some ways, animal studies in particular can be a little bit like astrology. And so you take what you want from it at the time. So with a story like this, if you're currently struggling with how altruistic you are or how much you give to charity, then you will read this and be like, oh, geez, if an ant can pull down a web and help her mate, like, I should be doing more. But if you're in a different place, you'll interpret this in a totally different way. But the truth is, it's just an ant. It's just an ant, and they just killed a bucket load of termites.
How do you deal with this in your own work? Like on Science Versus, do you feel pressure to provide a meaning at the end?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, not that you'd put this on there, but in our current episode, like, people were like, so you're going to have like a landing sentence? I was like, nah, let's just finish it with scoring. Which is how you maybe will finish this too.
No, we'd never go out like that.
The moral of the story is, even if we don't know whether they are motivated by empathy when they're performing rescue behavior, when we collect stories like this one, it gives us reason to see ourselves in them and feel empathetically towards an animal that's not of our own species.
Yeah, you can start by not squishing the ant on your windowsill.
Don't squish the ants, that's right.
Really? But that was all well and good. But, like, after there's quite a lot of ants on your windowsill, then you're allowed to squish them, right? Like, there's a cutoff.
You're heartless. You want to play us out with some war tunes?
Okay, feel free to never use this. Okay, so it's like, I guess if they're, like, going into the battle, it'd be like...
Okay, now we're in battle.
Oh, now we're in battle. So I guess you need like, yes, I'm like, what I'm thinking of is like, but it's just a rhythm. It's just like, what's that song that's like, do, 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 do? You know the one that's like, do, 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 do. Anyway, that's terrible.
If you have a burning question you can't get to the bottom of, you know what to do. 833-RING-ELT. 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Gabby Bolgarelli, Emily Foreman, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Laura Lichtman. With help from Nicole Pasulka, Doug Barron, Sarah Ventry, and Pascaline Sorde. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Scored by Dara Hirsch, Dan Brunel, and Wendy Zuckerman. And mixed by Dara Hirsch. My tongue is squishy and orange too. Goodbye.
And I just listened to your Sinkhole podcast, and I'm calling to reassure Maria that she is not alone in her sinkhole fears. I live here in Florida. I was a young girl when the Winter Park sinkhole happened, which was mentioned, and I didn't sleep for days, and as an adult now, I still have a fear, so just wanted to pass that along to Maria. And also that Dave was not really very reassuring.